Okay, so we are holding on Kuf Chof Beis Amud Aleph by the Mishnah. Okay, we learned in the previous Mishnah yesterday about what happens if a fire breaks out and a goy comes to put it out. So we said you're not allowed to tell him put it out, but you also don't have to tell him don't put it out. You can just leave him to do whatever he wants because he said he does it. I'll das atzmei. I'll die to the nafshi. So now we're going to continue on a similar theme where a goy does something where a yid is going to benefit from it. When is the yid allowed to or not? We have to realize, by the way, there are two different issues involved with you. There's one issue that you're not allowed to tell the goy to do a malacha for you called a mirul akum. And you have a different issue which overlaps with that, which is that if a goy does a malacha for you, then you're not allowed to have hana from it with the provisions that we're going to see in the Mishnah and in the Gemara over here. So sometimes you can have, in other words, that sometimes you can have that you didn't tell the goy to do the malacha, but nevertheless, you're still also to have hana from it. So that's what we're going to be discussing. So the Mishnah says, "Nachu shehidlik saner." If a goy lit a candle for him, lit a candle, the pashas for himself, mishtamish l'oda Yisrael, then a yid is allowed to use the light of that candle. The imbish v'il Yisrael, but if he lit it up for the sake of the yid, also then it would be also midrabanan to have hana from that candle. And by the way, when we say over here that does it mean just for the yid that he lit it for? Does it mean for any other yid? Most of the poskim say the second way, that it would mean it would be also for any yid to have hana from it. There are the minority. I think Tosfos Rid says that that would mean only for the yid that the goy did it on behalf of, but other Jews would be allowed to. Number two, mile mayim lahashkes behem. Tell you, if a goy filled up water on Shabbos from a pit where it's an isur d'oraisa to fill it up with. So let's say the pit is large enough to be a Rishus HaYachid, as we've discussed earlier in the Masechta. It's 10 tefachim deep and at least 4x4 wide. And it's standing in Rishus HaRabim. So when the guy fills up water from the pit and brings it to the surface and he's carrying from one Rishus to another. So the same thing, Mashka Achar Yisrael, a Yid is allowed to fill up water after him, meaning the leftover water that's left after the goy gives his animal to drink, then a yid is allowed to use that. The imbish v'il Yisrael also, but again, if he filled it up for the yid, then it would be also to use because the goy did it, the goy got it by doing a malacha on Shabbos.
If in the house, he works for you, and you tell him middle of the week, you know, whenever you light a candle for yourself on Shabbos, don't put it out. Just leave this way everyone can enjoy it. This is how middle of the week.
So it's a little bit complicated. There's a lot of dinim. There's a lot of dinim of Amir al-Akum. I'm not sure it makes a difference really whether the guy works for you regularly in your house. But you do have cases, and I'd have to look it up in detail. But you do have cases where just because we're even during the week, you can't tell him to. I think during the week you're allowed to tell him, but I'm not sure of the specifics of all of that. It is a little bit complicated. One distinction is actually whether, and we mentioned over here in the case of this pit, whether that the pit is actually a Rishus HaYachid and he's carrying the water into Rishus HaRabim, because that makes a difference. If it's an Issa D'Araisa, then you have less latitude to have Hana from what he did. If it's an Issa D'Rabbanan, then you have a little more leeway. There's different other considerations that it brings in Shulchan Aruch as well. There's a difference if it's something that's really needed for Shabbos. There's a difference if it's a choler, even Shein by Sakana. So the dinim are a little bit complicated, and we're not going to get into all of them. We're not going to get into all of them in the Gemara over here, but we'll get into some of the basics. And then, I think later in the Masechta, we're going to be talking again about this concept of Amir al-Akum. So maybe then we'll have a chance to discuss it further. Anyway, so, yeah, so, so again, so if the guy filled it up for his own animal, then you're allowed to afterwards, use whatever's left over. But if he did it for Yisrael, then it would be also to, then it would be also to have hanah from it. Tosfos also draws a distinction, an important distinction between whether you are directly benefiting from the action of the guy or whether, or, for example, let's say in this case, the guy filled up water and your animal is directly drinking from it, or the previous case where the guy lights the candle and you're directly benefiting from that light versus where the guy kind of like removed a hezek or something and then you're benefiting from that. So we had in the previous Mishnah, right, that if the guy puts out the fire, you're not obligated to tell him not to do that, because the difference is that there it's more of an indirect hanah. He's doing a maisa, and indirectly more you're benefiting from it. So that is another distinction as well between, for example, having the guy turn on the light for you versus, one thing would be versus turn off the light, for example, because turning off the light is not necessarily the hana you're getting is less of a direct one. It's not that now you're able to use the dark for something that you weren't able to before. It's more that now, for example, you'll be able to sleep more comfortably or whatever. Actually, now that I think of it, I mean, another distinction also that factors into this. And again, I mean, like I said, the fact that there were all these distinctions is what makes it so complicated. But you also have a distinction sometimes between, is it something where you couldn't have done anything without that, where you couldn't have accomplished anything without the guy doing that malacha? For example, in the case of a light, you might have the room was completely dark. You weren't going to be able to do anything in it. Versus, let's say there was a light in there, but it was dim, and the guy turned up the lights brighter, let's say, where there you have a little more leeway to use that light, because you could have done whatever it is. You could have read or whatever it is by the original light. It was just, it would have been harder. So again, I mean, you have all these different factors. Some of them we're going to see in the Gemara over here. Some of them come up from other Gemaras. And then, you know, the actual halacha factors all those things in, and therefore in different cases, you have to look up the details of what you're allowed and what you're not allowed. Third case, by the way, Tosfos also mentions over here, so here's an example of this factor where you could have done it by yourself versus now just the guy made it easier for you. Tosfos draws a distinction between, let's say, we're saying if the guy drew the water for you, if the guy drew the water for the yid, then you're not allowed to give it to your animal, but would you be allowed to drink that water yourself? Tosfos says, actually, you would, because like this, okay, with the animal, there's no, if he hadn't drawn the water, you wouldn't be able to have it for your animal, because after all, the well was in Rishas HaYachid, the well itself is in Rishas HaYachid, it's situated in Rishas HaRabim, and you wouldn't have been able to get the water out. On the other hand, let's say for yourself, no problem. You could have climbed down into the well and drunk the water yourself, so therefore you can't say, says Tosfos, so therefore Rabbeinu Tam says in Tosfos, that you yourself would be allowed to drink that water because you would have been able to get it regardless. Then Tosfos continues that the Ri disagrees with that and says that there's no distinction when it mentions giving it to your animal, because that's the case in the Mishnah. But the fact of the matter is, it would be the same thing if you yourself drank from it. You wouldn't be allowed to if the guy filled it up for you. Okay. Third case, the Mishnah says, "Osa nochri kevesh leredboy." If a goy makes a ramp to get off a boat, yored achrav Yisrael. So the case is the boat docked on Shabbos. Now the case also is if a boat docks on Shabbos, not necessarily are you allowed to get off it on Shabbos anyway. If it was outside the Tum before Shabbos, then you have a problem of Tum Shabbos. But you have a case where the boat was within the Tum before Shabbos, and now you need a ramp or a gangplank or something to get off the boat. So now, if the guy made it for himself to go down, Yerded Achrav Yisrael, then Yisrael is allowed to use the same ramp or the same gangplank to go off the boat after him. Being Mishvu Yisrael also. And again, if the guy made it for the Yisrael, then it would be also. In all these cases, when we say osur, it would mean it's osur until after Shabbos, b'chdei she'yeh osur. You'd have to wait the amount of time that it takes after Shabbos for the goy to do this malacha, for him to draw the water or light the flame or make the ramp or whatever, and only then would you be allowed to use it. But again, in all these three cases, if he made it for himself, then it's mutter. And the Gemara tells, Maisa Ram Gamliel the Skenim show you boim besfina. It happened once that Ram Gamliel and the Skenim had come by boat, and the boat docked on Shabbos. Again, it was within the tchum before Shabbos. The Gemara actually mentions in Eruvin that Ram Gamliel had a special kind of something like the Gemara calls it over there a shreferes, which means a tube. So it was something like a spyglass or a telescope or something where he was able to use with it to figure out that they had been within the Tchum Shabbos when Shabbos began, and therefore now they're allowed to get off the boat on Shabbos. So it happened once that the boat docked on Shabbos. But also Nachri Kevish later by a guy who had been on that boat made a gangplank to get off the boat. The Yoda boat Ram Gamliel scanned him, and Ram Gamliel scanned him also went off the boat using that gangplank. So we see that an example of that where the goy did it for himself and you're allowed to have anafman afterwards. Okay. Now, why do we have three cases in the Mishnah? So the Gemara says it's tricha. We need all three of them. If we were only told the case involving the candle, we're saying if the goy lights the candle, then you will, and for himself, then you're allowed to have an offment. You would say, because the difference is, mishum de ner la'echad ner la'meya. Because the difference is that a candle, there's no reason to be goyzer that he might add extra on behalf of the yid. A candle for one person is a flame, a lamp, whatever, that lights up for one person also lights up for 100. So you can't say that he added extra. You can't say that he did extra malacha on behalf of the yid. So therefore, maybe that's why it would be mutter. Ava mayim, but when it comes to water, ligzer, maybe we should make a gzera, dilma osila apushi b'shvil Yisrael. Maybe you have to be concerned. Maybe he might take a draw extra water for the yid, knowing that the yid has to water his animal as well, and therefore maybe we should be goyzer that even if he did it for himself, maybe we should be goyzer that he might add extra for the yid. Therefore, the Mishnah has to tell us also the case of the water, that even in that case you're allowed to, that even in that case you're allowed to give the water to your animal afterwards, as long as he didn't do it for you. And then the kevesh lamali. Now, why do we need the case of the ramp? Isn't that the same as the case of the candle? Because, again, you make one ramp, one person could get off the boat with it, or 100 people could get off with it, one after the other. The reason is, you're right, we don't really need the case of the ramp. Because the Mishnah wanted to mention the case of Ram Gamliel and Skenim, and that's an important thing, because Maiser Rav, we have many times in Chas where it's very nice, we have a din that theoretically it should be so, but not necessarily do we always pass in that way. Sometimes we have, like we had in last week's parasha with Zimri and Cosby, right? Halacha ve'en Murentain. The halacha is such and such, but if a person comes to ask a shayla, you don't paskin for him like that. So here you might have thought the same kind of thing. Therefore, we want to tell the story of Ram Gamliel and the Skenim to show that it is actually mutter, such a thing, when the guy did a malacha for himself. And therefore, so since we want to mention that, then the Mishnah introduces that by mentioning the case of the ramp. Even though you're right, it didn't really need to. It could have just gone straight into the case of Ram Gamliel. Okay. More on this topic. Tananabana. Nachri shalikit asavim. If a goy gathered grass for his animal on Shabbos, and again, we're talking about he picked the grass, so he did the malacha. Machil achav Yisrael. A yid is allowed to feed his animal the rest of the grass afterwards. Rashi, by the way, stresses over here that what we mean is it has to be that the goy first feeds his animal and then you take whatever is left. Because otherwise, if you do the other way around, if you start taking first, then it makes it look more like that, like he did the malacha for you. Even if so you could have, let's say he picked grass for his animal. Then let's say, for example, he decided, you know what, I'm not going to bother. I'll feed my animal someplace else or whatever. According to Rashi, it would come out that you're not allowed. You would not be allowed to use that grass then. Only if the goy used it and then you're using the rest of it, then it would be mutter. Okay. So uh, okay. I forgot to mention, by the way. So I did mention. So again, if what the goy did was an isur d'rabbanan, then you have a little more. Then you have a little more of a heter. Then Tosfos discusses over here. Then you would say if it was an isur d'rabbanan, then you would say that if it was done for a particular yid, then that yid himself is not allowed to use the is not allowed to use it, but a different yid would. As opposed to if it was an isur d'raisa, then nobody is if he did it for the yid. Okay. So again, so if he collected grass for his animal, so you're allowed to use the leftover grass for your animal, but not if he picked it for the Yisrael. Same thing, milim mayim lahashpis behemdoi. If a person filled up, if a guy filled up a bucket of water to feed, to water his animal, mashka achav Yisrael, then a yid is allowed to use the rest of the water after him, the imbishvil Yisrael also, but if it was done for Yisrael, then it's also, bamed ranam amurim. So now the Braisa adds a detail that we haven't discussed yet. When is all this talking about she'en makiroi? If the goy does not recognize, does not know the yid, and therefore when he did the malacha, you can't say that he did it for you can't say that he did it for the yid because he didn't even know him. Then it would be mutter. Ava makiroi osur. But if the goy recognizes the yid, in other words, they're friends, then it would be osur even if the goy did it for himself. B'pashtus, we would assume at this point because now the goy is doing it on behalf of the yid as well. So that's we're going to see soon in the Gemara what the situation with that is when we say this issue of makiroi and not. Okay, but first the Gemara asks, what do you mean that you're saying that if the goy picked grass for his animal on Shabbos, then we're saying that if the goy gave some of it to his and that if the goy used it for his animal and then you have some left, then you're allowed to use it, but if not, then not. So the Gemara says, "Eini, is that so?" Va'amar of Huna, Amar of Chanina, Mamid Adam Behemti Agabi Asavim B'Shabbos. A person is allowed to have his animal stand on grass that's still attached on Shabbos, and the animal itself can graze and pick grass with its mouth and eat it. By the way, Tosfos refers to over here something from the Mechilta that says, now on the face of it, what do you mean? You're not allowed to have the animal do a malacha. You have a concept called mechamer, where for example, you're not allowed to have an animal carry a load for you on Shabbos. But the Mechilta says that's talking about your shvisas behemta. When we say in Kiddush, for example, that ato vincha v'techa avdecha v'amascha v'amtecha v'amtecha. So it means that you're not allowed to have the animal do malacha for you on Shabbos. For example, to carry a load. But for the animal to do malacha for itself, for example, that it's standing on attached grass and it's going to eat the grass, that you're allowed to do. And in fact, that would be included. The Mechilta says that's included in Laman Yon, elsewhere. The pasuk says Laman Yonuach Shor Chavach Amerecha. Also in the second Aseres Adibus, Laman Yonuach. Well, that's Laman Yonuach Avchav Amosla. No, but in Parshas Mishpatim, you have an expression. Laman Yonuach Shor Chavach Amerecha, and the Mechilta explains that the part of the yonuach, the resting of the animal, would be if you allow it to graze normally like it does during the week. So the animal itself is allowed to pick grass and with its mouth and eat it on Shabbos. So Rav Huna is saying you're allowed to have the animal stand on the attached grass and it can detach the grass and eat it on Shabbos. Ava lo yagabe muktzah b'Shabbos, but you would not allow to have the animal stand by grass that's muktzah, let's say that you set aside for some purpose, because then the problem is you might take some of it and give it to your animal to eat. So now the question first of all is that the grass that the goy picked on Shabbos should be muktzah as well, because after all it was attached before Shabbos. You didn't intend for it to be picked on Shabbos, so therefore it should be considered muktzah. In fact, Tosfos says even Reb Shimon, who holds, as we've learned before, about a very narrow concept of muktzah, even Reb Shimon might agree in a case like this, you had no expectation that it was going to be picked on Shabbos. It's one thing, let's say we talked about, for example, a lamp that went out on Shabbos. Reb Shimon is going to say it's not muktzah, fine, because you know at some point during Shabbos it's going to go out, unless we talk about it's a very large lamp, which can be expected to be burning throughout Shabbos, but a smaller lamp you expect is going to go out. Here you had no particular expectation that this grass is going to be picked, so therefore it should be considered muktzah. So fine, you're allowed to have your animals stand and take the grass itself for that was attached to the ground. But how are we saying that if the goy picked grass on Shabbos for his animal, then you're allowed to give the rest to your animal? We just said you're not allowed to have it. You're not allowed to give it grass, which is mukta, and this grass is mukta. The grass that the goy picked is mukta because it was attached before Shabbos. Well, you can have both. I mean, you can feed an animal grass that was already that you picked, or you're able to have many animals are able to graze themselves, right? Many animals can just go and pick. The problem is that once it was picked, on the face of it, we're asking that it's one thing if the animal is doing the malacha itself, but how are you allowed to take the grass and feed it to the animal where you're therefore handling mukta? No. But that's not what we're saying. When we're saying machil achav Yisrael, when we're saying that the yid is allowed to give the grass afterwards to the now again Tosfos Rabbi Natan and Tosfos who learns before that when the situation is when you could have accomplished the same thing yourself in a way which was mutter and instead you had the goy did it and therefore for example we had again the example of where you could climb down into the well and drink versus when the water was brought for the animal where the animal can't climb down into the well. Tosfos Rabbi Natan makes a similar distinction over here that let's say that the grass is on the other side, the grass, let's say, is on the other side of the river or someplace else where you wouldn't have been able to bring the animal there. So now you're bringing the grass to the animal. Rabbi Natan would actually say that, yeah, if the animal itself is able to go there, then it would actually be mutter. But in any case, but let's say we're talking about a case where there was no way to get the grass to the animal without you bringing it. How are you allowed to bring it if it's mukta? The answer is dekoyim la ba'apa. The answer is we're not talking about that you actually give the grass to the animal. You stand in the animal's way so it can't go in a different direction. And then it goes and eats. So you yourself are not standing close enough to the grass where there's a concern that you might pick up the grass and give it to the animal. You're just redirecting the animal by standing in its way and making it go in a different direction. Okay. So this way you're not carrying, right? Okay. Omamar. Okay. So now getting back to we said in the Braisa of a Medvar Mumusha in Makiroi, we say when are you allowed to have Hana from what the goy did is only if he doesn't recognize you, only if he doesn't know you. Ava Makiroi also, but we said if he does know you, then it's also to use whatever it is he made on Shabbos, because whatever it is he made or did on Shabbos, because then you still have the concern that he might have done it for you as well. The problem is, Haram Gamliel Makirei Hava, in the case of Ram Gamliel and the Skanim on the boat in our Mishnah, they knew each other because they'd just been on a boat voyage the whole way. So the Pashtos, they got to know each other. And yet we see that Ram Gamliel and the Skanim used the gangplank that this goy made and they went off the boat on it on Shabbos. So how is that, Mother? The answer is Abaya says because what happened was the goy did not make it in front of them. He made it on the boat, but he made it on a different part of the boat where they weren't. So they didn't make it right in front of them. So therefore, you can't say Rashi actually says when he made it, Rav Gamliel wasn't there that he should have kavana for him. So maybe what it means is actually the goy may have made it. Not just for everybody else. That's the point. Abaya is saying the fact, because the Braisa said that if Makiroi, then it's also, so we're saying that he made it when Ram Gamliel wasn't around. So maybe it just means Ram Gamliel wasn't there on deck at the time when he made it. So therefore, maybe you can't say he had Ram Gamliel in mind. It could also be, I guess it has to be that way, because there's no other real way. You can't say he made it during the week, because then there'd be no problem using it on Shabbos. So you can't say, let's say, sometime during the week, Ram Gamliel was off the boat. And it can't even be that he made it the previous Shabbos, let's say. And let's say at some previous time, Ram Gamliel might have been off the boat. Because then by now, you'd be able to use it anyway, because it was long since B'chtei Shiyasu. So, and obviously, Ram Gamliel didn't get off the boat before him, because we're saying they were on the boat till he made the gangplank and then got off. So it has to mean, B'pashtos, that he made it when Ram Gamliel wasn't around there, was in a different part of the boat, and we're saying it's mutter to do that, because he didn't have then we can't say if Ram Gamliel is not actually around, then he doesn't necessarily have him in mind.
Sure.
Right. Uh-huh. Well, so, I mean, there the walkway wasn't made on Shabbos. There was just a matter of putting it down. So, again, that's not necessarily, there's not necessarily a malacha d'oraisa involved. It can be a malacha d'rabbanon, and in addition, it can be only d'rabbanon. In addition, as we're going to discuss soon, they're doing it, you know, we have to figure out who they're doing it primarily for. So wait, right now we said Abaya's explanation is that if makiroi, then you have a problem. But wait, we're not done yet. Okay. But Abaya says it was Shaloi Bafonov. Well, no, I mean, the Braisa, rather, had said Makiroi, but Abaya is saying it's Shaloi Bafonov, therefore it was Mutter, because he didn't do it right when Rabbi Gamliel was there. Well, it was material that he brought with him on the boat, obviously, fine, but, could be, yeah. I mean, well, he had to make it for the first time, I guess. But I mean, the Ramban does also draw a distinction between whether if it was made from wood that was still attached on Shabbos, still attached to the ground on Shabbos, so the goy actually cut down trees or whatever to make it, then you have an issue of muktzah as well. But if it was boards that were already detached before Shabbos, then you don't have that issue. Okay, Tosfos learns actually that Abaya would say like this. Maybe in general you wouldn't say if the goy does the malacha in front of a yid that he has in mind the yid more than anybody else. But in this case, Rabbi Gamliel is a nasi and he's the most important person on the boat. So therefore, if the goy made the ramp right in when Rabbi Gamliel was there, then it would demonstrate that he's doing it much more so for Rabbi Gamliel. And therefore, Abaya says that would be a problem. Whereas if he's doing it Shaloi Bafanov, then you have more latitude to say that he's doing it for himself. Okay, that's Abaya. Rava Amar Afilu Tema Bafanov. Rava says you don't even need that. It could even be the difference is the goy made the ramp right in front of Rav Gamliel. But it's again one of these cases of Ner LaEchad, Ner LaMeya. A candle for one is the same as a candle for 100. In other words, again, as we said at the beginning of the Gemara, the ramp is the same kind of thing. You don't need a separate ramp. You don't need a separate gangplank for each person. Unlike, for example, grass where each or water where each animal needs its own grass or its own water. So therefore. So therefore, since the goy made one ramp, then you have no problem with makirei. As opposed to when it comes to grass, let's say. So Rava would say the distinction between makirei and not makirei only applies when you have something where the goy conceivably could add something extra for you, like pick extra grass or draw extra water or whatever. But not where he's not doing anything different for himself than he would for you. Okay. So the Gemara says, Mace, you're telling me, Rava, that there's no difference whether he made it in front of Rav Gamliel or not. It's just different. Rav Gamliel was allowed to use it because it can't have been made, there can't have been anything added extra for Rav Gamliel because the same gangplank that everybody's going to be using. But the Braisa says, Omalahen Rav Gamliel, that Rav Gamliel says to the Chachamim, Hoyo v'shaloi b'fanenu asoi, since the goy made this ramp not in our presence, Nered boy, so we're allowed to go off the boat on an Shabbos. So according to Rava, what's the difference before Neinu or not? Rava is saying that when you have Ner Laechod, Ner Lameya, then there's no difference. The answer is Ema Hoyova Asoi Nered boy. You're right. Rava would say the wording of the Braisa has to be because he made it, and he made it for himself, then therefore we can go down. And in other words, according to Rava, the Braisa is mentioning that he made it Shaloi B'Faneinu, not because that's important to the halacha, but just because that's how it happened to be. It so happened the goy made it not in Rav Gamliel's presence. But according to Rava, that doesn't make a difference, whereas according to Abaya, it does. Okay, Meisvi, Toshma, I think Mo says, well, yeah, okay, but the point is, if he had made it on a weekday, there'd be nothing to talk about. The whole point is, he made it on Shabbos. And they went off on Shabbos, yeah. If they were only going to go off more than B'chadeshi Yosu afterwards, and more than the amount of time after Shabbos it takes to make it, then again, there'd be no issue. Okay. Toshma, Irshi Yisro V'Nochrim Dorim B'Soicha, if you have a city where Jews and Goyim live, and in the city there's a bathhouse which operates on Shabbos. And we've talked before about the concept that a yid is not allowed to bathe in a bathhouse on Shabbos, midrabbanon, but here we're not going to talk about bathing it on Shabbos. Here we're going to talk about Motzei Shabbos. Because on Shabbos, right, but there's also, because on Shabbos itself, yeah, we've talked before about the Zegzeira, midrabbanon, not to go into a bathhouse on Shabbos because of that problem, because there were bathhouse attendants that were heating up the bathhouse on Shabbos and claiming that they did it before Shabbos, yeah. So the bathhouse there that operates on Shabbos, im roiv nochrim, if most of the people in town are goyim, mutu luchutz b'miyad, then you're allowed to bathe in it right away after Shabbos. You don't have to wait until b'chadesh yosu. And if most of the people in town are Jews, then you have to wait long enough for the hot water to get heated up. Meaning, in other words, you have to wait b'chadesh yosu. Now, the question is, Rashi says, that when it comes to heating up a bathhouse, don't you have the same thing? The pashtos, they don't heat it up any differently when you have more people versus when you have less people. So therefore, it should be an example of ner la'echad, ner la'meya. It would be like lighting a candle or like making a ramp for a boat to get off the boat. And therefore, we would say that since there are goyim in town who are using this bathhouse, they would anyway have had to heat up the bathhouse for them. They're not necessarily adding anything because there are Jews coming as well. Well, there might be more water, but in other words, the point is, as far as the actual heating up the bathhouse, they're heating it up the same thing. They're heating up the water in the bathhouse the same thing. That's the question. In other words, if we say. So what are we saying? We're saying that Roiv Yisrael, then it would be also B'chadeshi Yosu. So now, Abaya is saying that it's Mutter if he did it Shaloi B'fonav. This is Shaloi B'fonav. Rava is saying that it's that when Ner La'echad Ner La'meya, then it doesn't matter. This is Ner La'echad Ner La'meya. Because they have to heat it up anyway for the Goyish clientele to use it. So therefore, so why are we saying you can only use it if most of the people in town are Jews, then you're only allowed to use it B'chadeshi Yosu? The answer is Hosam Kimachami Adaita the Ruba Bachami. Because the answer is, we were assuming when we started the question that regardless, they're going to be heating it up, whether for the Roy or for the Miut. Whoever is going to be coming, they're going to be heating it up for them. And therefore, if there are Goyim coming, they're going to be heating it up for them. Now we're saying that no, the vote is they're going to heat it up, having in mind the majority. So therefore, the main Chilul Shabbos is being done for them. As opposed to when you have, for example, the ramp, you have one goy and one yid. So the goy is doing adaita d'nafshe. He's doing it for his own sake, so he can get off the boat, or so he can have light, or whatever. So then you have then according to Abaya, if it was done shaloi b'funav, then you're okay. And according to Rava, we would say that according to Rava, it's a question of is it something that the goy could add something extra or not. Okay. Toshma. Ner hadoluk b'mesiba. We have another braisa that says that when you have a lamp burning at a party, same thing. Im roiv nochrim mutol leshamish l'ora. If most of the people there in town, if most of the people at the party rather are goyim, then you're allowed to use the light of that from that flame. Im roiv yisrael osur and mechta al mechta osur. And the braisa continues: if it's exactly half Jews and half goyim, then it's also osur to use. Now again, the problem is that it's a case of makiroi, and according to Abaya, it should be mutter only if it's shaloi b'fonav, and according to Rava, it should be mutter because ner la'echad ner la'meya, and we're saying that it's osur. Well, that's the question. We could be talking about that they came and found it already lit. We could be talking about where they light it in front of them. But yeah, the answer is Hosam Nami. The answer now the Ritva points out. I mean, so one second. Hosam Nami. The answer is Ki Madlaki. When they light the candle, Adaita Deruba Madlaki. They have in mind the ropes, so therefore the Yisrael or the Iker. Now, when it comes to mechza al mechza, why is it also in that case? Because then Rashi says, because then you can't be sure. He might have been doing it for the sake of the Yisrael. He might have been doing it mainly for the sake of the goyim. As opposed to, so Rashi explains, when you have one yid and one goy, and he's lighting the candle, obviously he's doing it for himself, because he himself needs light. But when you have a whole party with Jews and goyim, not necessarily. You have a half of them are Jews. He may be lighting it, having in mind the Jews who constitute half of the party. Therefore, it would be also. Or maybe not. So therefore, we can't be sure, and therefore, we have to say it's also. Anyway, the Ritva points out, I mean, so once we have the same answer by the Merchatz, why are we asking it again by the candle? And he says, because the difference is the Merchatz, you might figure that, look, if you're only going to have a small number of people visiting the bathhouse, then you're not going to bother heating it up, or at least maybe, like you said, not very much. You're not going to bother heating up very much water. As opposed to a candle, you could argue there's no difference. Either way, you need light over there. So therefore, maybe you could argue that even if it was Roiv Jews, it should be Mutter. And then, therefore, we're saying that, no, that the point is, that it's not, even then, we can't say that he has in mind himself. Even then, we have to say that he has in mind the Roy of Jews who are there. So then you'd have to wait B'chdei She'asu until after Shabbos in order to use it, right? Okay. So the Gemara tells a case. Shmuel Ikla Lebei Ovin Toron. Shmuel visited the house of Ovin Toron. Toron, now she says the name of a place. So he's Ovin from Toron. Asahu Nochri Adlik Shaga. A goy came into the room and lit a candle. Ahadrinu Shmuel la'ape, so Shmuel turned his face to the other direction because he didn't want to have hanah from that candle, because as far as he knew, the goy had lit it for them, for himself and Oven and the other Jews who were there. So now what about ner la'echad ner l'meya? So Tosfos says if you can see that the goy is doing it for his benefit, then fine. But here it wasn't obvious yet. But given the chaz of the icy star of Kakari, then Shmuel saw that the goy had brought a star and was reading it by the candlelight. Omar, he says, oh, in that case, adaita d'nafshi hu da'adlik. In that case, it means that he lit it for himself, for his own purposes. Adrinu inulape gabishraga. So Shmuel turned back his face to the candle. Now he can have hanah from it as well, because the goy did it for himself, and there's no problem of shema yarbe because it's a candle, and you can't light any more of the same candle for other people.
By that logic, a goy should never be have to turn on the light in a shul for a whole Jewish kehillah.
Ah, so you're asking about what happens if you have a goy turn on a light in shul. So yes.
Which happens all the time.
Ah, so we were talking about, first of all, it doesn't happen all the time. Most of the time they have them on timers or whatever. But again, you have a number of factors to consider, Lakula over here. One of them is that it is Latzorich Mitzvah. It is Latzorich Mitzvah, and therefore you have a little more latitude over there when the goy is doing the malacha for you. You also have, there's the consideration that so it is Latzorich Mitzvah. You also have what else is there? Tzorich Tzibur. I mean, that's neither here nor there. Adarav, but the fact that it's a Tzibur of Jews should make it more Osir. But a big part of it is the fact that it's a tzorich mitzvah. Another consideration actually is you usually have some light in the shul. There would be enough light to be able to daven by. It would just be difficult. You'd have to squint and whatever. So like this again, like we said before, if you're able to do it, but as Tosfos had mentioned the svara before, if you would have been able to do it by yourself, and now the goy is just making it easier for you, then you have more of a heter to use it.
I could turn the light by yourself on Shabbos.
So air conditioning is another consideration also, because with air conditioning actually you have a little more. I'll address what you asked in a second, Avram Moshe. I'm just addressing something that Elliot asked about going turning on air conditioners. So there also you have a little of an issue over there, because when it comes to heat and cold, we consider that people can be considered choila relative to that, because it's uncomfortable with the heat and the cold, and therefore again you have a little bit of latitude as far as that also, when a goy is doing a malacha for the sake of a choila, for somebody who might be choila. What we asking of measure?
No, I would say regarding a light, that's something you really need. I mean, if the shul is completely dark.
So if the shul is completely dark, then you have to have a little more of an issue, because then you wouldn't have been able to read or anything at all. So then you tack, then it's tack and not so simple. Then you, again, one heter that you can use is the fact that it's that it's an important sortach of Shabbos, and therefore maybe you'd have a little more of a heter for it. But yeah, I mean, there are the dinim of these things, what you're allowed to have hanah from and whatnot, are a little bit complicated. You have they're discussed in several places in Hilchos Shabbos, because you have the details of what you're allowed to ask the goy before Shabbos to do on Shabbos. you have what are you allowed to have him do on Shabbos. And again, aside from the whole issue of Amir Lakum, here we're focusing more on the question of, given aside from the question of Amir Lakum, what are the dinim as far as you being allowed to have Hana from the Malacha that he did for you on Shabbos. So again, we have all the various factors that we mentioned before that all factor into this, when you're allowed, when you're not allowed. But you do have a case, for example, that it mentions that, let's say, for example, it's dark in your house and a goy comes in and turns on the light, where it's not Latsoda Chatzma, like we had over here, until the goy pulled out the shtar, as far as Shmuel knew, he lit it for himself, as far as Shmuel knew, he lit it on behalf of the Jews. So then, not only you're not allowed to have Hana from that light, but even actually, before the goy lights it, you have to even, you know, throw him out of your house and tell him you can't be doing that. Unless, you know, if you mentioned the Shmir Shabbos Kochasa based on what it says in Shulchan Aruch, that's fine. You know, if you protested and nevertheless he went and lit it anyway, then fine. Then you have a little more of a heter because then he clearly did it Latsoda Chatzma because you were specifically telling him not to. But other than that,
so that's the contradiction, that if it's for yourself on Shabbos, you cannot do it, even though it's a Tzerech Mitzvah. But for the whole Kehillah, it's also a Tzerech Mitzvah, but then you can do it. What's the logic?
No, hold on. When we say Tzerech Mitzvah, we're not talking about Yochid versus Rabbim. When you need light on Shabbos, it's not necessarily the Tzerech Mitzvah. I mean, it can be. It can be that you need it in order, for example, to be able to have your Shabbos meal. But on the other hand, it doesn't necessarily have to be. For the Tzibur, and sure, it will be. I don't think the distinction in Shulchan Aruch is not so much Tzerech Mitzvah, but rather Tzerech Shabbos, like when it's a great need for Shabbos. So again, I mean, you know, the actual dinim we have to look up in Shulchan Aruch, they're a little bit complex, but these are at least the basic factors that factor into it when the poskim are dealing with the details, the nitty gritty of what exactly we're allowed and what we're allowed. A large part of it is based on our sugya. Again, we are going to be talking about later on in the Masechta, we're going to be revisiting the matter of Amir Lakum. So then Best Hashem, we can discuss it further. Okay. The topic of this perek that we're going to learn now, and most of the next perek, is going to be the dinim of muhtza. So we're going to say later on in the perek that muhtza, of course, we know is derabanan. There's no such thing as muhtza deraisa. The whole concept of muhtza is derabanan. The Gemara is going to explain later on in the perek that what happened was we find in the times at the beginning of the second Beis Mikdash, we find Nehemiah writes in his sefer that he was seeing there were Jews who were doing malacha, they were doing actual malacha on Shabbos and whatever, and he had to warn them and then threaten them and then and whatever to get them to stop. So in that period, therefore, the Chachamim set up the dinim of mukta in order to make it. If a person can't even handle something which is mukta on Shabbos, then they won't be able to come to do the malacha anyway. And then we're going to say in the Gemara that originally they made the dinim of mukta very, very stringent. And then as people became better at keeping Shabbos, then therefore they were able to make more and more leniencies in them. And then within that, of course, we had the machlokas of Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Shimon that we've had throughout the Masechta about what exactly is the scope of the dinim of mukta, where we had in general Rabbi Shimon holds of a very narrow scope and Rabbi Huda holds of a wider one. It comes up as far as Noilat, it comes up as far as various other things. So we're going to start talking about mukta. We have to remember, as we go through the perek, that there are a number of different categories of mukta. Mostly of it now, you have certain kinds of mukta we've talked about before. For example, you have a kind of mukta called mukta machmas gufoy, where you have an item itself, which is not a keli, and doesn't really have a defined use on Shabbos. For example, sticks, rocks, dirt, things like that. Those we're not really going to be dealing with so much over here. Mostly we're going to be focusing on the kind of mukta that apply to kalim. And you have various kinds. You have various kinds of mukta, the different grades and different categories of mukta that apply to kalim. So that's what we're going to be dealing with mostly. So the Mishnah starts off, kol kalim nitolim b'Shabbos. All kalim can be handled on Shabbos, v'dalsi sehen imohem, and their doors with them. Meaning you have kalim that have doors, for example, cabinets. You're allowed to carry them together with the doors, but afalpishin esparku, you have b'Shabbos, in parenthesis over here, we're going to see in the Gemara that doesn't necessarily belong. Even if the doors came off, you're still allowed to handle the doors. in a diamond, the Dallas is a bias. Now the doors of these Kalim, the door of a cabinet, is not like the door of a house, where if the door of a house comes off the hinges, then it is in fact Mukta, Lafisha Einan Minamukhan, because the difference is the door of a house is not Minamukhan, it was not something that was available to handle before Shabbos, because not a Kali. As opposed to the door of a cabinet, of a movable cabinet, for example, we're talking about a movable cabinet, not a built-in one. But let's say, for example, you have like a dresser or something, for example, a dresser or wardrobe or whatever that has a door. If the door came off, we're saying that the door itself is still considered part of the keli, and you're allowed to handle it. We'll see whether we're talking about that the door came off on Shabbos or it came off on a weekday. Tosfos actually has a bit of a different girsa over here. The girsa we have in front of us, which is Rashi's girsa, is kol kalim nitolin b'Shabbos. All kalim can be handled on Shabbos. Tosfos says, what do you mean? There are not all kalim can be handled on Shabbos. There are certain kalim that cannot. There are certain kalim, as we're going to go through our perek, that are mukta. So what we mean is, in other words, any kalim that are not mukta and you're allowed to move them on Shabbos, you're also allowed to move the doors if the doors came off them. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. Notel Adam, and by the way, this is relevant. This matter of a door falling off, let's say, is relevant as far as the case. For example, a button falls off clothing on Shabbos. So we'll see in the Gemara. We'll address more this matter of doors, and then we'll talk about that. Okay. Notel Adam Kurnas Lafatzeya Bayasar goes, and the Mishnah continues. A person is allowed to take a hammer on Shabbos to crack nuts, and we're going to see in the Gemara. Are we talking about a hammer that's meant for cracking nuts, like what we have nowadays, a nut cracker, or do we mean a regular hammer that you during the week you would usually use for banging nails, and now on Shabbos you want to use it for cracking nuts? We'll see that in the Gemara. Kaudim Lachtach Bayasar Vela. You're allowed to use on Shabbos an axe to chop a dvela, an eagle shell dvela, a cake of pressed figs. They're very hard. Sometimes you need an axe to chop it apart to be able to get off a piece to eat. So you're allowed to do that. Megera logubar sakvina. You're allowed to use a saw to cut cheese, because the cheese could be very hard. You need a saw to cut it. Magrefa ligrifer sakrigus. You're allowed to use a rake on Shabbos, where normally during the week you would use the rake to rake up straw or leaves or whatever in Limukta. But on Shabbos, you're allowed to use it in order to rake up dried figs. Where you have, let's say, you have dried a rake or a shovel or whatever, you're using them to rake them or shovel them out of the container, out of the jar that they're in, let's say. Okay. As a rachas ves malgeis losses all of the cotton. You're allowed on Shabbos to use a rachas, which is a thing that's used for winnowing grain. During the week, you use it. During the week, it's made sort of like a pitchfork, but it has a covering. It has like something that goes between the tines of it. You put the so you have like spaces between there. It's made like sort of like a flat woven net at the end of a handle. During the week, you put the grain on it, and you throw it up into the air, and that's the malacha of Zorah, where the wind carries away the straw and whatnot, and then the heavier grain falls down. So usually that would be mukta, but you have a rachas, there's a malgez, or a pitchfork, losses all of the cotton, you're allowed to use those in order to give food to a child. Meaning that, in other words, let's say you have the child is on the other side of the river, and you can't reach him, so therefore you use that on Shabbos to reach across and get him the food. As a kush ves a karko, you're allowed to use on Shabbos a kush, which is a spinning, which is the needle from a spinning wheel. You have not a needle really, it's like a stick that you use in the course of spinning thread. You use the stick over there during the spinning process, and afterwards you wind the thread around it. So you're allowed to use that on Shabbos ves a karko, or the sharp stick that you use during the week when weaving. You use it as we've learned before. You have a tolda of the malacha of mesach. Is after you've set up the shesi threads on your loom, you have some of them might be a little bit tangled, some of them might be a little bit crossed or whatever, so you take a kauka, you take a sharpened stick, and you use them to separate, you bang on them, you use them to separate them. So those kinds of things, this kush or this kauka, which are long and skinny and have a point at the end, you're allowed to use on Shabbos to stick into, let's say you want to eat strawberries or other kinds of soft berries, then you can you use that. Like nowadays, you might not want to get your hands dirty. You'd stick them with a fork, or you'd stick them with a skewer or something. So you could use a kosher or a kauka for that purpose. Machachoyad, you're allowed to use a hand needle, meaning a regular sewing needle. Little by a sakot, to take out a thorn or a splinter on Shabbos. v'shasakoyim, and you're allowed to use a sack maker's needle, which is much larger, liftoyach b'es adelas, to open up the door. If you lost your key, then you use a large needle like that to pick the lock. So those are all examples of things you're allowed to use, and again, we'll see in the Gemara whether that means these are things that were reserved before Shabbos for that use, or whether therefore the point of the mission is that you're allowed to use them for that purpose, or are we talking about a regular hammer or a regular pitchfork or whatever, and you're repurposing them on Shabbos for something which is mutter. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. When we say kol ha-kelim nitolim, we said that all kelim can be handled, and we said the doors also. What do you mean? V'alfa pishin is spalkul b'Shabbos. We're saying, does that mean if the doors came off on Shabbos? Okay, the word b'Shabbos in our Mishnah is in parenthesis, but still, the Gemara is assuming at this point that the word b'Shabbos, when it says kol ha-kelim nitolim b'Shabbos, is also referring to when the doors came off. Alfa pishin is spalkul would mean also on Shabbos. So are you saying that even though they came off on Shabbos, what does that mean? V'loy meboy b'chol. Needless to say, if the door came off on weekdays, you would be allowed to move the door on Shabbos. Why? Adrabah, b'Shabbos mukhanan al gabay avihen. Adrabah, argue the other way around. That when the door came off on Shabbos, before Shabbos it was attached to the closet. Therefore, it shouldn't be mutter, because the cabinet itself was mutter to be moved on Shabbos. Therefore, the door is also mutter. And therefore, and as usual with mukta, we usually go according to how it was at the beginning of Shabbos. If it wasn't mukta at the beginning of Shabbos, it's not mukta for the rest of Shabbos. So if it broke off on Shabbos, then sure, there'd be more reason to say that you'd be allowed to move it. But you could argue if the door came off before Shabbos, it's not part of the keli when Shabbos comes in. So maybe it should be mukta. So when the Mishnah is saying afa pishin espauku, even though they came off, and we're assuming it means even though they came off on Shabbos, it's mutter, implying if it came off on weekdays, there's no chiddush that it's mutter. But even if it came off on Shabbos, it's mutter. Wouldn't the logic be the other way around? Now, Tosfos explains, if the piece that came off the keli is a broken thing, then it's different. If it doesn't have a function on Shabbos, then you could say it's not a keli anymore, therefore it's mukta. Adrava, it might be noilad. But over here, the door is still considered a keli. It still is usable for its original purpose. You can reattach it to the cabinet after Shabbos. So therefore, maybe we shouldn't, so therefore, why are we considering it mukta? It shouldn't be considered noilad. The answer is Omar Abaye Hachikama. You're right. The Mishnah doesn't mean that the door came off on Shabbos. What it means is Hachikama. Kol Kalim Nitolim B'Shabbos. All Kalim can be handled on Shabbos. The Dalsis Seheni Mohen. The doors can also be handled with them. Alpha Pishin Espauku Bachoil. And even if the door came off on weekdays, and you would think that therefore when it came in Shabbos, it wasn't attached, and therefore it should be Mukta. No, it doesn't matter Nitolim B'Shabbos. It can still be carried on Shabbos. Because the door itself is still considered a Kali, and it still has a function. So this is relevant again as far as the question of buttons. If you have a button comes off a shirt, for example, and you're intending to put it back on, then we would say it's not mukta because it would be like it is a keli after all. The button does have a function, and it does have a functional purpose, and you're planning to reattach it after Shabbos. Although the poskim say it may not, the instrument Shabbos Kol Chasa, for example, it mentions it may not be so simple. If it's the kind of button where, let's say, you have, you know, there's a zillion buttons, like a regular shirt button, you have a zillion other buttons like that, and you might not necessarily bother keeping this one, you might say, okay, if I have this one, then good, I'll reattach it. But if not, if it gets lost, big deal, I'll take another button of the thousand other ones that are out there, then maybe this one would be Mukta. Only if it's like a special button, like the kinds you have on a blazer, for example, let's say, a kapata also, you have the buttons on there are also fairly common. But okay, let's say, for example, you have the ones on weekday jackets, on weekday blazers, where a lot of time, you know, you have these gold colored or silver colored buttons or whatever that have a particular design on them, and you'd want to keep that one in order to put it back on so it'll match. So then we would say that one is, then we would say that kind is not mukta. Similar to the door over here. Okay. Right, so because they want to make sure it's still there after Shabbos. Well, so again, picking it up, it depends really. So part of the distinction might be, is it an easily replaceable button where you have many others like it out there, where therefore you might not necessarily reattach this one versus the kind that's specific to this particular jacket or whatever you might get. Okay. Tanarabana, we learn in a braisa. Delas shal shida v'shal teva v'shal migdal, the door of a shida, teva, or migdal, which are various kinds of cabinets or wooden furniture or chests or whatever. So those kinds of things, noitlin, you're allowed to take them off on Shabbos. Ava loy machzirin, but you're not allowed to put them back on Shabbos. Now, on the face of it, Notlin sounds like it means you're allowed to take them off the hinges. So we're going to see what that means. Avaloimachzirin, but you're not allowed to put it back on the hinges. We have to realize, by the way, that hinges in those times worked a little bit differently than they do now. The hinges of doors and things were not like now where they're attached with screws, because then obviously you can't put that, you can't take that off and put that back on Shabbos. It had like pins on the top and bottom, like sort of like you think of like a Lego door. You think of like in a Lego set, you have the door over there, has like a, you know, it has a thing on top that goes into one of the holes on the Lego piece, and on the bottom it has something similar. So those was how doors was made in those days, with pins like that at the top and at the bottom. So you're allowed to take it off but not put it back. The door of a chicken coop, and you're not allowed to take it off and you're not allowed to put it back. Now, so let's figure out why. I can understand why you can't take off or put back the door of a chicken coop, because a chicken coop is attached to the ground, because we figure, kibin de mechabri ba'ara, since the chicken coop is attached to the ground, yesh binyan b'karka, yesh stira b'karka. Definitely the malacha of binyan and stira applies to things that are attached to the ground. So therefore, no question about it. If you take off the door, then you're doing a malacha of stira. And if you put on the door, then you're doing a malacha of binyan. What? So making an oil is another point. That might be all. Well, that's the point. In other words, you're doing soyser. Well, yes, right. So you're asking about the fact that you're asking about the malacha of tzeda. So fine, if you put back it. No, preventing them from going out is not a malacha. There's no malacha in preventing them. Fine, but that, so then you might have a malacha of tzeda as well. But let's say the chicken coop is empty. Or let's say, fine, we're not dealing with the malacha of tzeda. Right now we're dealing with the malacha of binyan. So definitely fine. If it's a chicken coop, it's attached to the ground, so then you no question you got binyan and stira involved. The chicken coop itself is attached to the ground. So therefore, it's like the door of a house. You can't take off and put on the door of a house on Shabbos, because the house is attached to the ground, and the door is bottle to the house. That's the fact we're saying in the Mishnah, that if the door comes off on Shabbos, if the door of a house comes off on Shabbos, we're saying it's Mukta. Okay. So that's as far as the lul shal tarnagolim. Ela shal shida v'shal teva v'shal migdol ma'ikasavar. But what about, why are we saying that with a cabinet or a closet or whatever, you're allowed to take off the door, but you're not allowed to put it on? Ma'ikasavar. What does the Tana hold? E kasavar yesh binyan v'kelim yesh stira v'kelim. If you're going to say that there is binyan in kelim, then there's also stira, because wherever you have binyan, you have stira. So if you're not allowed to, put on the door, why should you be allowed to take it off? And the E ain't stira b'kelim, ain't binyan b'kelim. And if you're going to say you're mutter to take it off because there's no issur of stira when it comes to kelim, then you're not allowed to put it on either. No, because either way, you have a malacha of boinan, you have a malacha of soitzer, the two of the 39 malachas. So if you're going to say that binyan applies to kelim that are not attached to the ground, like this cabinet or chest or whatever, then stira also applies. If stira doesn't apply, binyan shouldn't apply. So why is one mutter and the other one not? The Braisa does agree that there is binyan and stira in kelim. The Braisa doesn't mean you're allowed to take off the door on Shabbos. The Braisa means if the door was off, then you're not allowed to put it back. So Notlin, Avaloy Machzirin, Abaya says, would mean if the door was taken off, then you're not allowed to put it back.
What's the chiddush? Obviously, there's no chiddush in telling you that if it was out, you cannot put it back.
One second, that is exactly the chiddush. That yesh binyan v'kelim, yesh stira v'kelim. You're not allowed to take it off, and even if it was off, you're not allowed to put it back. In other words, that yesh binyan v'kelim. That's what Abaya says. That's exactly what the Braisa wants to tell us, is yesh binyan v'kelim and yesh stira v'kelim. Amalei Rava Shtei Trubas B'Dover. However, Rava says, I have two points to contradict that. Chada de Neutlin Katani. Number one, the Braisa said, use the expression Neutlin. You can take off. Not it was taken off. But, oh, my Aval, Leimachzirin. Also, if you're going to say it means if it was off, you're not allowed to put it back. What do you mean Aval? But you're not allowed to put it back. What's the contrast? What's the but? So Rava says, no, what it is the Tana does hold, there's no binyan and stira by kelim. The only reason you're not allowed to put back the door, not midaraisa, because you're going to be doing a malacha of binyan, but midarabanan, because the chachamim are concerned that if you put it back, you might actually hammer it into place, and then you're going to be doing the malacha of makabapakish. So, because then you're making the Kali functional again. In other words, you can have, again, when you have these doors that have the pegs at the ends of them, it's possible to put them back in sort of loosely. It's possible to put them back in very tightly, so they'll stay on from now on, and that would be a malacha of makor patish. So therefore, midrabbanan, we don't want you to do that. But midraisa, you're right, he wouldn't be doing a malacha unless he actually did that, unless he put it back in tightly. We talked about before, the halacha in Shulchan Aruch is a little bit of both. We do say that to a certain extent, ein binyan and ein stira b'kelim, but not when it comes to, for example, when you're making a whole new keli, then you would have an issue of binyan, then you would have an issue of binyan b'kelim. So you do have sometimes when you do say, yesh binyan b'kelim and yesh stira b'kelim, and then we have times when you don't say that. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Neutel Adam Kurnas Chola, we said a person can take a person can use a hammer to crack nuts, etc. So what kind of hammer are we talking about? Amar Rav Yehuda, Kurnas Shala Goizin, Lafatzea Bayesai Goizin. What we mean is a hammer that's reserved for cracking nuts. That's the kind you're allowed to use it on Shabbos to crack nuts, because it's mainly meant for a malacha of Heter. Conceivably, it can be used for a malacha of Yisur, because it is something that you could use to bang in nails, but nevertheless, you're allowed to use it on Shabbos, because primarily it's meant for Heter. But if it was a hammer used by blacksmiths or whatever, the regular hammer like we have, that's mainly used for malachas of Isser, then not. Which means, therefore, Rabbi Yehuda holds, when you have a keli that was main malacha is for Isser, you're not even allowed to handle it on Shabbos, l'tzorech gufoy. Now you have two cases in which you're allowed to handle certain kinds of mukta items. They're called l'tzorech gufoy and l'tzorech mekoymoy. L'tzorech gufoy would be like the example over here, where you want to use it to crack nuts. L'tzorech mekoymoy would be, let's say, the hammer is on a chair, and you want to sit on the chair. So Rabbi Yehuda is saying, if it's a hammer that's regularly used for by a blacksmith or whatever, that's usually used for an iser, not only you're not allowed to move it l'tzorech mekoymoy, you're not even allowed to move it l'tzorech gufoy. But Rabba says, Elameata, by that logic, what about the continuation of the Mishnah? We said that you're allowed to use a pitchfork or a winnowing tool over there to pass food across the river, let's say, to a kid. Mela, all the other things in our Mishnah. Yeah, you can say you have a specific hammer that you set aside for cracking nuts. You have a specific axe that you set aside to cut your igor shel dvela or whatever. But it's not a usual thing that a kid is going to be on the other side of the river that you have to pass across food to him, where you're going to say, therefore, you're going to set aside a rachas or a malgis for that purpose. So Papashra said it has to mean, therefore, that you're repurposing it on Shabbos. Okay, Tosfos says, fine. Rabbi Yehuda would say that actually maybe it is. Maybe we are talking about that before Shabbos you had in mind that you're going to use it for this purpose. It means you're allowed to use a blacksmith's hammer to crack nuts on Shabbos. Which means that Rabba holds that even if you have a kli shemalachta le'isur, if you need it legufoy, if you need it for it to use it for some other purpose, for example, to crack nuts, then you're allowed to do that on Shabbos. Esve Abaya l'Rabba, but Abaya says to Rabba, I have a contradiction. Abraisa says meducha, a mortar, which usually during the week you use it to grind up spices or garlic or whatever. So it's a klisha malach d'leser. But the Braisa says, im yesh bashum metalplanoisa, if there is garlic still in the mortar, you're allowed to move the mortar on Shabbos. Rashi says the reason is because once the garlic is not mukta, therefore you're allowed to move the keli with it. Other Rishonim learn, so some Rishonim say from that you have a general concept that you're allowed to move something mukta together with something non-mukta. Many other Rishonim disagree with that, though, and the halacha is not like that. The halacha, in this case, you'd be allowed to, because when there's garlic inside it, then it's not functioning right now as a mortar. It's functioning as a keli. It's functioning as a keli to hold the garlic. So therefore, you're allowed to move it on Shabbos. V'im lav ein metalplanoi. Say, if not, then not. Let's say if you wanted to sit on it. Now, the point is, according to you, Rabba, why not? It's a klisha malach d'leser. Even if there's no garlic in it, you want to use it for a purpose that's mutter, let's say to sit on it. What's the problem? The answer is, Amalei, Rabba answers him, Hamani, Rabbi Nechemya, that would actually be according to Rabbi Nechemya, who was the most machmir in Dinim HaMukta, de Omar. He says later on in our parak, Ein kli nitl el tzarech tashmishoy. You're only allowed to move a keli on Shabbos only when you're moving it for the actual purpose that it was meant for. Meaning, according to Reb Nechemiah, even a keli that's mutter, even a keli that's used for that's used for a mutter dika purpose on Shabbos, he says you're only allowed to move it on Shabbos when you're using it for that purpose. So let's say, for example, you have, let's say, for example, a bowl. Reb Nechemiah would say that you're allowed to use a bowl on Shabbos to eat out of. That's its purpose for being used. But he would say, let's say you're not allowed to use a bowl, let's say, to cover up. We have in the previous parak, let's say, to use a bowl to cover up tzoyah or whatever. He would say you can't do that because you can only move the bowl for the particular purpose that it was made for. So therefore, by the same token, he would say the meducha, even if you're going to say that, even if you're going to say. So fine, according to him, fine, the meducha is even worse. It's a klisha malach de leiser. So you're only allowed to move it for the purpose that it was made for. The purpose it was made for is to grind up spices or garlic or whatever, and you can't do that on Shabbos. Therefore, according to him, it's mukta. But that wouldn't necessarily be so according to the other tanoim. Okay, we'll continue this discussion tomorrow, Bez Hashem.